Hello, and welcome to the critically acclaimed, amazingly reviewed, number one podcast in the Stiggers Galeazzatto's household. How y'all doing?
Our parents love it. Just kidding. My parents haven't even listened to it.
My mom is my biggest fan of the cool.
Your mom is my favorite Instagram follower, because not only does she comment on every single thing, you can just count on her for all the likes.
I know.
You know?
And I'll tell you what. I actually spoke to my mother yesterday, and I told her we should bring her on the podcast because
she's the sweetest person I've ever met, and it'd be a little glimpse into me.
So maybe we'll get my mom on, and it'll be like
she's listening
bonus
right now. Hi, babe.
Hi, mom. I love you, mom. It'll be cool. I just think it'll be cool. Maybe we should bring your mom on too.
We'll
do two bonus episodes. Maggie does a great her mom impression. Go, give us a little.
Well, Maggie and Spiro. Oh. That Spiro, I just love him so much. He's such a dear.
Nikki?
You tell him anytime he wants to come to Lake Placid, he is welcome.
Thanks, Nikki. I'll be there. that was amazing.
How you doing, babe?
I am good.
I just feel so amazing sitting next to the co-executive producer and co-founder of Nico Frank Productions.
Thank you so much. I am Spiro Marcos. If you don't know, I am the one of the hosts here and co-executive producer of Nico Frank Productions, along with my bestie right here, Miss Maggie Stiggers. So we had an amazing guest today.
We really did. If we have any Chopped fans out there, yes. I have been watching for the past month or so, knowing that she was coming on. We have the casting director of Chopped with us today.
Beth Schiff, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get a round of applause. Okay, I'll add that in.
She's such a smart woman, such a passionate, motivated woman.
Such a smart woman. And you know what's amazing? Like, seeing people's story, like, how did you get into casting?
And such a big show, a show that's really made an impact on TV.
It's the number one show on the Food Network.
And how many seasons has it been?
47 seasons. Wow. They're starting to record now. And she's been involved since it went into production. So she talked about how they recorded pilots, but she's been a part of the creative team since they went to production. So that's over 600 episodes, she said.
Wow, yeah.
Which
and
is
she's
amazing.
A
Think
she's a foodie
that.
Herself, so I think that makes the job even more fun.
Yeah, she's from Baltimore, Maryland. she talks about her rise from Baltimore to New York. She also taught me how to say Baltimore.
I'm still not convinced you're saying it right. I think there's more of like a D sound. Baltimore, maybe?
Baltimore.
Yeah, I think
like
it's Voldemort. More like that.
Well, I'll work on it. Clearly, I need some work. But she was an amazing guest and super inspiring. And, you know, it's nice to see all different aspects of this entertainment industry, all of them being led with kindness. She talks about some really kind people that helped pave her way. And I just think it's such an inspirational episode.
Yeah. And not only is she a casting director, she's a celebrity booker, a story producer, a talent booker. And, you know, she's into all types of media, film. She started off in a broadcasting station.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she talks about how she loves, you know, figuring out how things are made. So she literally got into production that way and found jobs based on just trying to figure out how these things work.
I think it's really like a recipe for success. And it's good advice for anyone out there who has a dream or they know that they want to be involved in some way in production or media, is just volunteering and just making sure that you just get yourself in the door. And then once your foot's in the door, you can just kind of pave your own way.
Yeah, which is great.
Make your own opportunities.
You're going to love the episode. And let's start off, you know, with something we love to do every time. And let's get into some random facts of kindness. Random facts of kindness.
This week, especially because it's the holiday season, you know, December, January is a great time to think about those people that are in need. And I love to shout out the company New York Cares. It's a organization that I love to celebrate because they do amazing work here in New York City, especially this time of year. It was actually founded in 1987 and has over 52,000 volunteers every single year. And I was reading that they serve 400,000 New Yorkers every single year, or that was last year. So we'll have to see what the updated numbers are for this year. But they have a lot of amazing programs happening right now. And one actually that Michael and I do every year, it's called Winter Wishes.
Okay.
You can sign up on their website at www.newyorkcares.org.
www.newyorkcares.org.
You sign up and adopt a child or children that need holiday gifts, and you can register as an individual or a group. And it's really sweet, you guys, because this year we adopted two kids, and then you get their Christmas letters in the mail, and they're so sweet.
Aww.
And this year our kids wanted... They wanted a basketball and an LOL doll, which I didn't know what it was. But yeah, it's a big thing, apparently.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah. Well, it's good because like there's kind of a limit. It's a $40 limit per child. So you can do it with your office. So you could do it as a group. You can get everyone. If you work in a restaurant, everybody in the restaurant can do it and adopt one child each. It's a really great way to give back. They also organize a winter coat drive. So you can help kids get new coats and parents. You can help kids get into college. You can volunteer with your children. There's lots of opportunities, so definitely check them out online, especially if you have time on your hands.
Wow, that's amazing. So check them out. That would be awesome. Maybe we should do a little something for Nico Frank Productions.
Yeah, we should.
So we'll get on that. I'm gonna click away. They're a really great organization. Now, granted, by the time you hear this, the holidays may be over, but there's always children in need. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about the holidays.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the reason why I really wanted to shout them out too, is that they don't just do work over the holidays. They're a year long organization. So if you've really been wanting to volunteer, help with the homeless, or just give back in some kind of way, they'll have endless opportunities. There's actually usually a waiting list.
Wow.
To be a volunteer. So.
And you know what? It just goes to show it's not only, you know, around the holidays that we need to think about those less fortunate than us. Sometimes we need to think about them all year round, because the needs only get greater in our community. So definitely, you know, look out if you're trying to be an advocate, or if you're trying to help, if you're trying to do something, you know, start there, newyorkcares.org. And explore other options so you can do your part, especially if you have the opportunity to do your part.
But I'm excited to get into this episode.
I'm excited. Are you all ready?
Yeah. This was really fascinating.
This was fun. So here we go. Beth Schiff at the Cool Kids Table.
In 3, 2, 1. Hey, don't go anywhere. Just a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey, Maggie. Did you know that Radio Free Brooklyn's Drive to 5 fundraising campaign is underway? In May, RFB turns 5 years old, and we need to raise $25,000 so we can continue bringing you commercial-free independent radio for another 5 years. Because we think raising money should be fun, each month we'll be bringing listeners fun challenges with some great prizes. The first is a trivia quiz to find out just how well you know RFB. The top 5 scorers are going to win a limited edition 5-year anniversary RFB tee. You can also dial 718-613-8201. That's 718-673-8201 to leave us a message letting us know why you love RFB, or just wish us a happy birthday. Your message may be played on the air, so get on it.
It's the Cool Kids Table. They were never the cool kids, so they just bought a table. Now it's the Cool Kids Table, yeah.
Coaster's only table to me.
Okay.
All right. So we did it. We're here. It's official. We're
recording. I love being here.
I love being here. Thank you for being here, Beth. Welcome to the Cool Kids Table.
Thank you for inviting me. It's rare that I get invited to the Cool Kids Table.
Oh, you're more than worthy of being here. I've met you through a mutual friend, Rachel, who was on season one of the podcast. Ever since I met you, you were always so sweet, so kind, so beautiful, obviously, which helps. But you were always just so generous and so sweet. And every time I saw you at like a Rachel birthday or something, you always took the time to like chat with me. And you've just always been so wonderful. And I figured you've had quite a career. You've done a lot. You've started a production company. You've been working as a casting director on Chopped for so long. So I figured like something a little different than what we do. We've had a lot of actors on the show and things like that. So it's nice to have the other side of the table.
It really is. I love having casting directors. And actually, they're usually our most downloaded episodes.
Our casting directors.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, because all those hungry actors are like, what do I need to do to get a job?
What should I do?
How do I get this job?
The inside scoop.
Exactly. So we're going to start at the very beginning. So you grew up in Baltimore. Were you born in Baltimore? Or you grew up there, born and raised? Like, what was your childhood situation like?
My childhood situation, yes. Born, bred, grew up in Baltimore, but as we like to say, Baltimore.
I was going to say, yeah.
Baltimore. Yeah, we don't do the T. There's no Baltimore. Baltimore.
Bummer.
But my dad was from the Bronx and my mom is from Boston, so that's why I don't have that like traditional Baltimore accent. Like, the O is, is very popular. Going home. So that's why I sort of like, don't maybe sound like I'm from Baltimore, but I grew up in Baltimore.
Great. And what was that like? Were your two parents, like brothers, sisters?
Yeah, traditional sort of like middle class, upper middle class upbringing, public school. I'm a product of public school.
Same.
And And Baltimore was a great place to grow up. You know, while I was growing up, Baltimore was really developing the downtown area, which is now subsequently exploded. But like at the time, sort of the Harbor Place area and Fells Point area, and like they were revitalizing downtown because Baltimore, like Philly, was a very industrial town. And then the industry left, and then it was a, you know, it sort of devastated the community. And so like it had to really build itself back up.
Right.
And so while I was growing up, I could really see the changes start to happen, right? Like you wouldn't go downtown, but then, you know, the development of Harbor Place and Fells Point, and then you really brought people downtown. Unfortunately, we had also had lost our Baltimore Colts during the time I was growing up, which was a big deal. So now there's baseball, there's football, there's lots more going on downtown.
That's awesome. And what did your parents do for a living?
My mom was in residential real estate, and my dad has a PhD in chemistry. And
Work.
I know, right? I don't even know what that means.
I was going to say chemistry. That was one I really did not connect with. Yeah.
Me too. And so, and the funny part is like, I should have had a bit easier time in chemistry.
Right, because
like,
you had your dad.
Right. But like when someone explains to you chemistry, like the highest level, you're just like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Checked right out.
And did he like try to get you to be like a science nerd, or was he was just like, you do you and do your own thing?
Exactly. Yeah.
And what was that thing? Like, what did you do in your downtime? What did you do in Balmer?
Let's see. Growing up, actually, I mean, in my younger years, I was really into gymnastics.
Oh.
Yeah.
You were flexy?
I was flexy. Still somewhat flexy, but not nearly as flexy as I was.
That happens when you get older. I can barely tie my shoes at this point.
Yeah, right? Seriously.
Yeah, I was really into gymnastics when I was young, and like sort of did the little bit of competition and a little bit of demos and stuff like that. But then, you know, I got into high school and, you know, what were the cool kids doing and what were the boys doing? And, you know, so that sort of sports sort of went by the wayside.
That's awesome. So when you were in high school, I saw you started as an intern at a news station. When did that come to pass?
Yeah, so I've always been interested in how things get made. I mean, even here, I come in and I'm like, how many podcasts do you do?
Right,
how does
it
work?
Right, yeah.
That's the thing. I was always very interested in like watching TV and fascinated by like how does that all get made? How do the people get there? How does it all get put together? So in high school, especially my senior year, I had an opportunity. I had taken all my credits, and I had an opportunity to do an internship. So I chose to do it at the local news station, and I would go out with the crews, and I would see them, you know, I would see them shoot the news and do the stand-ups, and then I would go sit in the editing room. And so, like, I really
Wow, you must have learned so much.
I did, and I was so fascinated by, like, how it all gets put together. Like, you know, it's not magic necessarily, and everybody has a job, but I had no idea. So that's where I started. Like, in high school, I would leave, you know, half a day or whatever, and everybody else was taking their like advanced physics, and I was like, no thank you,
no.
I'm gonna go
to the news station.
I'm gonna go do the news. And then I like I think one summer I worked at a radio station, same kind of thing.
Wow.
You know, just really fascinated by like what goes on behind the scenes.
And were you applying to schools at the time? And when you were applying, were you looking for broadcasting majors, or like what were you applying for?
You know, that's really interesting because I can't even really remember. Okay. I remember applying to schools, state schools, and I remember applying to the University of Florida because it was kind of like University of Maryland, but in the South.
A little bit warmer.
Yeah, it was warmer. It had a lot of good programs. I was definitely interested in like the journalism and communication track.
Okay.
So I definitely wanted to go somewhere with that track, but I also was like, warmer sounds good.
Right. And that's what you did? You did journalism and communications?
I did.
Nice.
Yeah, production, direction, television and film.
And what was that like? What was UF like? Did you enjoy UF?
Yeah, UF was great. I mean, it's a huge, huge, huge school. I 100% loved it. I am the type of student where like I can sit in the back of a class of hundreds of people, and I will take time on my own, or I'll go to the study sessions. And like, so for me, being at that big of a school was not a problem. Also, you can make it smaller, like any situation, you know, you can make it smaller by the people you meet or the groups you join.
Right.
And so I was really involved in WUFT, which produced a nightly newscast.
Amazing.
So I was part of the news crew, and I was part of the production team, and I would do anything from like literally work a camera or the teleprompter or the floor manager. Again, sort of really interested in sort of, getting behind the production of things.
That's awesome.
I love that.
And you enjoyed that? That was like a cool thing for you?
I loved it. I mean, you felt as part of a team, right? And you were producing something every night. There was like a deadline. There was like that energy and that.
And there's like an element of casting in news stations as well, right? Like, because you have to try to find the stories that you're going to put on and who's interesting and who you want to feature.
Right. True. All true.
So you were doing it even from then. You were thinking of the big picture and how things would be made and how they would look and how they would, the end product. Is that kind of what you think of the end product always? Or?
Yeah, I'm always thinking about the end product.
Which is amazing. Yeah. I mean, that I feel like that's
a producer brain. Yeah.
Cool.
And so you actually ended up back in Baltimore after that, being a production assistant. How did that come into play?
Well, when I graduated and I didn't have a job, my parents were like, that's great.
Like us all.
Right, you can live here for free or anywhere else you need to pay. So I moved back to Baltimore and I started to research like what goes on in the Baltimore, Washington area. And what I learned was that there were a lot of films that came through because like sort of the DC area was a backdrop for things. And I'm not exactly sure how I got there, but I went down to the film office because every community, every city, every major city has sort of like a film commission.
Okay.
And I went down to the film office and I was like, I just want to be here and I want to volunteer and I want to get on any project that comes through. Wow. And that was the opportunity. So that's what I did. And so any project that came through town, I was sort of the first one in quotes, air quotes, knew about it. And then I would get on as like the PA. I'll get coffee. I'll make copies. I'll write your scripts. I even did some location scouting. Wow. I drove the producers around.
I think that type of energy and eagerness is so important at the beginning because, we've had an intern and she's exactly the same way. All she wants to do is get involved. And it reminds us of us in a way because we were the same exact way. You're like hungry for that knowledge and you want to better yourself and you know that you're just starting off. You don't really have the resume that you need. So you just jump in and make sure you just create those opportunities for yourself. So I think that's really admirable.
Yeah. And the thing is about interning is that like if you really keep your eyes open and look and listen, you can learn a lot. Yeah. Right?
Right.
So like as I did locations or whatever in the production office, like I was really interested, like what does everybody do? How does it work? And then I can maybe choose to go a different, a direction. I can choose a path.
Was there a path you were kind of considering before casting and before that world came to be?
Not really. I mean, the way I fell into casting, as I like to say it, because at that point, casting, I didn't know that much about casting, right? Okay. Casting wasn't a track.
Well, it's also not something that happens in the production side. It's already done. So you were on productions that were pretty much already cast also.
Correct. And although I always had an interest in figuring out like how did that person get to that role, I never really thought about it as a job or a career. So there were movies, like I said, that had come through Baltimore and Washington. And in this one particular case, there was a major feature film coming through Baltimore. And the casting agency or the casting department was looking for help. And I was like, And I remember writing this letter or whatever saying like, I like people. I like to talk to people. I don't really know exactly what it involves, but I'm very interested.
Right.
And I ended up working. And that's how I fell into casting because I ended up working with the casting company on a feature film, doing extras and under fives, really learning about what it took to, make connections for people and put people in roles. Not only creatively, but sort of logistically in a business sense of like, what do the contracts look like?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
How long do they work? And, what does overtime look
when
like?
When do they get fed?
Yeah. Meal breaks and things like that. So that was really interesting for me.
Hmm. And you enjoyed that? And you were like,
I was just going to say, did you love it right away?
I think I did. I think like once I got into it and I was talking to people and I was like sort of evaluating, will you be good for this? And will you be right for this? And it really started to click for me.
And what was this? Can you say what this feature was? Because I mean, I'm sure it's out.
I'm
sure
curious as well.
Yeah,
I'm laughing. I'm like, if you could see me, I'm almost like blushing, embarrassed.
Oh, I see, but y'all don't.
Yeah. So that feature film was Major League 2.
Oh.
And they shot at Camden Yards.
Wow.
Which was sort of like the baby, again, air quotes, of Cleveland Stadium. So I think they shot the original Major League at Cleveland, and they shot the second in Camden Yards. So that was also really cool because we were in the bowels of Camden Yards and we were there at off hours and we met the players and the farm teams and like that was a whole other experience beyond casting too.
That's amazing. And did you stay on with them, with that company? Did you continue to cast for them after that?
I did, and that's how it all began.
Wow. And was there someone in that company that was like really kind and like really kind of took you under their wing and was like, I see something special in you and let me like really show you? Or were you just kind of thrown to the wolves and had to go?
So I want to back up a little bit in terms of kindness, because there was somebody, and I can't remember her last name, but you know, this inspired me to start to think about the people who've inspired me. But there was a woman named Claire in Baltimore, and this was at the time that I was interning. Okay. And I just really remember her because she was so kind and so helpful and so inspiring to me as a young, you know, go-getter. Who would introduce me to people, who would, you know, send me job information, or, you know, oh, you should talk to this people or look at this person, and just like super helpful. Someone like, you know, as a true sort of mentor in the beginning of my career. And then when I started working with the casting company, there was another woman who wasn't that much older than I am, but she had some experience in casting. And she sort of took me under her wing, and we're still friends to this day.
That is awesome.
Which is amazing. And I'll, you know, never forget her guidance and friendship through it.
Well, it's amazing because like that's the thing about A, this podcast, B, those kind people in our lives. Those are the people we never forget. And that's the thing about this podcast. We want to bring people to the forefront of people's ears, I guess, the way to say it, that are kind, because those are the changes that they'll see and hear about and kind of seek their own, you know, gratitude, or, you know, try to lead with kindness, because then moments like that can happen. You don't need to be rude to the intern that's coming in. You don't need to be mean to the new casting company. They're not there to take your job. They're there to help you do your job better. So the fact that you had people that guided you, they weren't much older than you. You probably could have taken her job if you really tried, but she was just there to help so that you guys can, the end result can be positive. And
I think it's also really rewarding to be the mentor too. Like I found it so, so nice to have an intern. Like I find myself, you know, she reminds me of me in ways, and like I'm trying to give her advice that I wish someone would give to me. Right. And so I think it's like a win-win in both situations, because you grow as a person when you can see that you're making a change in someone else's life too.
Yeah. Do you pay it forward? Like,
Do you have an intern?
I don't, but I mean, like, let's go back to our conversation or your earlier comment about Rachel Reese.
Right.
I mean, Rachel was my first, I shouldn't say my first assistant, but maybe first assistant. She was just like really graduating from college.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I had seen potential in her and wanted to, you know, guide and nurture Rachel. And now look at her.
Right.
So I'm like, I mean, she's like a sister to me. We're like family, but,
me
but
too.
I get so proud, like, you know, that I've helped encourage that career.
I love that, because you have really did play a big part. I mean, that was her first big job, her first real job. And that was, I mean, the job you do for Chopped. I mean, we're going to get there in a minute, but
so exciting.
I mean, it's so many.
I've been watching Chopped all week.
Yeah. But it's also like so much. I mean, it's four chefs every week, plus a backup, plus your hosts, plus your judges. You record three episodes at a time. You're recording a whole season. I mean, and there's been 40, you're on 48, 47?
They're about to go into the studio for season 47.
That's wild. That's wild.
Over 600 episodes.
That's wild. So good for you. And we'll jump there.
Yeah.
But we want to talk about New
York. Yeah, I was just going to ask how, in New York, like, how did you end up here? Did you immediately start casting as soon as you got here? Did you get a job first? How did that whole situation work?
So I always felt a pull to New York, right? Like, so I love Baltimore. I will always love Baltimore. I live downtown. I've always liked the energy of a city. So when I moved back to Baltimore and I started working for the casting agency locally there, I lived downtown. I would work on projects, movies, local, regional commercials and things like that. There's a SAG-AFTRA chapter in DC. So I knew all the SAG actors in like the Baltimore, Washington area. But I always felt the pull of New York. I had friends here. I would come back and forth and whatever. So I ended up getting an opportunity here with a small casting agency in
Was that
Manhattan.
City Lights or
no? That actually was it was called Godlove or Godlove and Sindlinger, or what they called GS Casting at the time.
Okay.
And they did mostly commercials
cool.
and like
cool.
maybe some industrial training films, and all union. So that's was basically my impetus to move here. Was like, okay, I got a job. I already have this casting experience locally. Like, right. I wanted it on a bigger.
Best way to move when you already have a job.
Yeah.
And what was that transition like? What were the, was there a change in the people? Was there like a change in the job? Was the hustle stronger? Like, what was the difference between Baltimore and New York City?
Yeah, the hustle was definitely more intense here.
Right.
You could, it was palpable, right? Like the union actors and the energy in Baltimore, Washington was, I'm going to say the word, more gentle. Hmm. And here you could feel the competitiveness. You could feel the intensity.
And I'm sure you were seeing many more people for roles than you were in Baltimore, right?
Correct. Right. Like
the pool
is
larger.
Like what was the difference?
The pool is definitely larger here. The competition felt, you know, felt bigger, more intense. So, and also was, you know, there was a learning curve because I didn't know the agents here yet. I didn't know the talent here yet. So there was like a learning curve to sort of like get in that groove.
That's cool. And did you like that drive? Did you like that hustle? Were you like, this is what I've been waiting for? Or did it take you a second to transition?
I think it took me a second to transition. But then once I got it, I got into it. I met some of my best friends who are still my friends, you know, during that period of my life casting those commercials. Mm-hmm. So that's really memorable. And in fact, I was just with a friend of mine the other night and we were kind of reminiscing about a couple of very memorable auditions, and people that we would audition.
I was just going to say, do you still see the same actors on TV? Yes. Like they're still going. Look at him. Look at Fred. He is still out there.
I do. Yeah, I really do. Like, it's, you know, especially some of the character actors or some of the people that were just really strong and working consistently back then are still working consistently. I love seeing talent that I recognize on commercials and on Law and Order and, you know, on camera.
Well, exactly. What I was going to say was, you know, you have the opportunity to create these opportunities for actors. And what you're saying, commercial, industrials, things like that, those are some actors' first jobs. That's some of their first exposure to television, to like that medium. And you kind of play a part in like what set off a lot of people's careers. Because then look at Chopped. You've brought people onto Chopped that have gone on to have amazing culinary careers, open restaurants in New York just based on that title of Chop Champion and Master whatever, Chop Master Champion, whatever they do, you know. And I just think that's like what a kind thing you get to do for these people who, I mean, we're all struggling. We're all trying to like be seen and heard in a new age where social media and exposure really does define your career. And it's sad, but you kind of got to play the game. And I think it's just so great that you've given all these opportunities to so many people.
So, well, it's funny because I was thinking about before I was coming here and trying to think about, you know, I want to have some interesting anecdotes, right? But so one of the first commercials that I cast Heidi Klum in one of her first commercials.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
I'll never forget that audition because I was really nervous, not because it was Heidi Klum, because she wasn't Heidi Klum then.
Right.
She was a model auditioning. But just because... it was a beauty commercial. So they're very focused on skin or hair or whatever it was. And this happened to be body wash. So, you know, the models had to come in and sort of like, I think it was either a tank top or maybe even a bathing suit. And I was like, oh my God, I've never done these auditions before.
Right.
They have to be beautiful. And it turned out to be Heidi Klum.
What was that like? I mean, was she, did you, could
was
you
she
tell
funny?
She was a star? Like, could you tell right off the bat that she was like going to be something? Or?
Yeah, I think I remember even back then thinking like, this is someone special or this is someone people are starting to talk about.
Got it.
So it was really fun to sort of think back then about like who the people were that we were seeing for commercials.
Yeah, so pretty much you made Heidi Klum famous. That's awesome. that's a great claim to fame.
It was either her first commercial. It was Caress. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that, but it was Caress.
Yeah, of course you can.
And I'm not sure if it was her first, but it was definitely one of her first.
That's amazing.
That's
I
so
love that.
Fun.
We're going to contact Heidi's people. She's going to be on season five of the podcast.
Yeah, season five. That's right. Yeah, we've got her booked.
And she can talk about her first commercial.
That's right.
That's awesome.
So let's jump to Chopped. Like, how did that come into your life?
So I went from casting a lot of commercials and industrial films into then casting hosts and experts. And I worked for a production company, City Lights, at the time, which is no longer around. But I worked for them, and this was like 2006-ish. When cable, this is so dated now, but it's like cable was starting to explode and there were a million channels and everybody needed content. And so I was working on things for like HGTV, finding design experts or home improvement experts or Travel Channel, finding travel experts, because at the end of the day, casting is casting. Like, what are you looking for? How do you find it? And how do you present the best people for those roles? Mm-hmm. So I kind of got into it that way. And I was at the production company when they pitched Chopped to the network. And I remember saying to the executive producer, and I'm like, hey, I like food and I like chefs and I could find chefs. I could really find anything. Right. So, you know, if this actually goes, I'd be really interested in working on it.
Interesting.
Cool.
2008.
Wow. Right.
And I heard the first episode, like, what was the host situation?
Oh, like, there was like a chihuahua or something, or like he was like a butler with a chihuahua coming down the stairs.
So, that was actually the first pilot. They did two pilots.
Okay.
Which I was not involved in. Okay. I actually came into it. I mean, I was there at the production company and I kind of knew what was happening, but I came into it when the series was going into production. But they did the first pilot and it was kind of kitschy. It was like they filmed it at a mansion and it was a different host and it was kind of like the butler and had a chihuahua and the person that got chopped, the chihuahua would have to eat the dish or that was fed to the chihuahua, which I knew would never go. Like that was just never going to fly on national television.
That is so funny.
So it was kind of kitschy and sort of cute, but it didn't end up working for the Food Network. Right. They really like pared it down and they were like, you know, do something that, you know, is just straight out cooking competition.
Right.
No kitsch. And that's what sold.
And it's the most successful show that Food Network has ever seen.
Been running forever.
Yeah. That's
amazing.
You've been on it for so many seasons. What's your favorite part of being a part of the show?
I think the favorite part is sort of bringing back what Spiro said was giving people opportunity to tell their story, mm-hmm. giving people opportunity to showcase their talent, mm-hmm. to potentially win money, mm-hmm.
right,
to potentially change people's lives.
Right.
And do you travel a lot to find these people? Like, how do you go about seeking out chefs for this? Because it's a lot. It's a lot of chefs you've gone through and a lot of people have been on the show. So,
well, casting in general has changed in terms of, like, first of all, I think there's nothing like meeting people in person.
Mm-hmm.
However, and we used to travel a lot to meet people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, technology has improved.
Yeah. FaceTime.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of FaceTime and Skype now with every casting. I mean, that's very rare where you get to actually meet people in person now, which makes me a little bit sad because I think there's nothing like making those connections in person. No.
And was it was it hard to keep finding chefs that were like up to that level that had a story to tell, like all those things? Or do you feel
or are you getting like thousands of submissions?
Like, what's the deal?
Well, once we got going, it was challenging to find people in the areas that we kept mining, like the tri-state area, right? Like we shoot in this area. So like mm-hmm. it was challenging to keep finding people. Once you start traveling and you're getting to people who haven't been asked or don't get asked all the time, you know, it opened up the door a little bit.
Right. And how often, because I was reading a little bit about the casting process, it's really interesting to think about, especially in like reality television world in these competition series. Like, how often is it that, like, do you get referrals from people like, oh, this guy's a really great chef, you should look at him? And how important is that versus the personal story that they have?
All of that's important, actually. Mm-hmm. And the process of casting, and again, like, I'm going to generalize the process of all casting, is generally like you look at submissions mm-hmm. and you see who might be a good fit. And you're also going out after people, right? You recognize people, whether it's a chef or an actor, mm-hmm. where you're like, oh, I saw you in this, or, you know. And so it's a little bit of both. You're evaluating submissions, but you're also doing the outreach and doing your own research.
One thing that I find might be challenging, though, because you're casting a cooking show. So mm-hmm. even if you're getting referrals or these Skype interviews or all this stuff, you still don't know how their food tastes.
Right,
so how does that fall into place?
Well, what I learned is by doing interviews, by talking to people, by having them describe dishes in detail, we could evaluate whether or not they could cook.
Wow. Right.
Because if they really couldn't describe a dish or how they made it, then they're never going to be able to do it on TV.
Right.
So that's part of the interview process?
100%.
Dish, like cook a dish for me? Like
three
digitally?
Dishes. Yep. Cook a dish for me. 2 to 3 dishes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome.
And is it on the spot or do you give them time?
Like, well, we basically, you know, beforehand prep them and tell them that we want them to describe a couple dishes. And it doesn't matter whether it's something on your menu now or maybe it's something that you're developing or something you even had on your menu a year ago. But we'd love for you to describe 3 different dishes
wow.
that sort of define you. your style.
I love that.
Have you ever been out in a restaurant in New York City and you're like, dang, this food is good. I want to talk to the chef and see if they're interested in Chopped.
Yeah, absolutely. I have. Here in New York City and in other places. Like, now it's become my mission. Like, you know, when I travel, I'm all about food. Like, where am I going?
Where am I eating?
Wow. And absolutely, I've been that person.
Has that come into fruition where that chef will be like, wow, okay, and they've actually ended up on the show?
Probably. I can't think of any particular instance, but I'm going to say probably it has to have happened. Where, because again, it goes back to like personal connections, because it's like, I've been in your restaurant. I'm having your food. I'm eating your food. I'm thinking it's delicious. I'm meeting you. I'm interested, you know, and a chef that may or may not have thought of like applying that world, sometimes yeah. have applied because I've been in there, or maybe one of my colleagues has been in there and sort of encouraged them.
That's
really cool.
So during this Chopped time, 40 whatever seasons, you started your own production company. Was this during Chopped or casting company? I'm sorry. So
casting
was this
company.
during Chopped you created You Choose or?
Yeah, because it, you know, became, I was originally working with the production company sort of on staff, but then the production company dissolved.
Right.
And so you're like, oh, what do I do now? Okay, I'll start my own thing.
Right.
Like I had been casting for so long, and I wanted to do multiple projects. So I sort of started my own thing and called it You Choose.
And what's that been like? Like having a casting company, but then also casting as much as you are on Chopped. Like, do you feel like you had to spread yourself, or do you feel like it was like viable because you have the experience?
I mean, viable because I have the experience, but definitely felt like a stretch, depending on where I was in the cycle of Chopped.
Got it.
And how many people help you at your own company?
So it's just me.
Just you.
And
okay.
Then help as needed.
Got
right?
It.
Depends on how many projects are going
Fierce
on.
Fierce lady boss.
Yeah. So you contract people? You do contracts? Like bring people on for projects or whatever?
Correct.
Great. And do you want that to expand? Or are you like happy with the way it's going right now?
I am happy with the way it's going right now. I actually never envisioned myself sort of having an office and overhead and paying workers comp and all that kind of thing. That was actually not my vision.
Okay.
Even back in the day when I was working at a casting agency, you know, looking at the older owners and things, and they all had spaces back in the day, like back in the day when the commercial casting was really booming, everybody had like a big office with like casting space. Now it's a lot different. Everybody sort of is like at a WeWork or at a communal space and rent casting space. So, you know, I sort of never envisioned having this whole office and staff and space thing.
I think it's amazing.
Thank you.
That is amazing.
Here at the Cool Kids Table, we love to feature badass women.
We do.
So
we love it so much.
Great to have you.
So thank you.
Well, and I love working with badass women.
Yeah.
You know, like I've been very fortunate to either work, you know, alongside or under or mentor a lot of badass women.
That's great.
I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, we like to lift them up. We do feature a lot of, we just did a film project where we featured as many women as possible. We had like 47 women on four films.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is really great.
All written by, directed by, and starring women.
Amazing. Yeah, and we paid them all. Which is great.
It was awesome.
It was amazing. So what are some great tips for people that are coming in for you? Is there anything specific you love to see or that you look for? Or is it just, you know, guide us?
I mean, I would say do your homework.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about that before she came in. We're like, did you listen? She's like, yeah, I did my homework because I always do my homework because I'm a casting director. That's amazing.
I really like when people do their homework. I really like when people read or become prepared, right? Especially we're talking about chefs. Like, I've asked you to describe dishes. Like, come in with the knowledge of what you're going to describe for me and don't sit for 5 minutes and try to think of a dish that you're going to describe.
Right. That was the purpose of telling you.
Yeah, 100% be prepared as much as you can.
Right.
Right. And I understand as an actor, if you have an agent or a manager, you may not always get the information, but ask the questions. You know, who are you going to see? You know, what is the role? You know, is there copy? You know, when does it shoot? Like, ask the questions. You may not get all the answers, but at least ask the questions so you go in as prepared as you can be. So when you meet that casting director, the casting director like me will be, you know, excited and impressed with how prepared you are.
I love that. And do you post to get to find new chefs for new seasons? Is there like a posting process or is it?
Yeah. Like, do you use like Actors Access and breakdowns?
I have, especially when I'm looking for amateurs, you know, or that in that kind of vein, like if I'm not looking for professional chefs, I will absolutely post on Actors Access, New York Casting, social media.
Are they are typically professional chefs though on the show, right? Or is there like a little mix?
There's a mix, but I would say, I don't know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say like, you know, 80% are professional chefs.
Yeah. You know, I actually worked with Mark Murphy and Manit. I worked at both of their restaurants.
You did?
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Which so a cool. Little degree of separation.
Okay. So what would you like the future to look like for Beth Schiff? Like, what do you see yourself doing in 5 years, 10 years?
We love this question.
Because
yeah, like, you know what? People put things in the universe and then they've happened.
So we like to, say that our podcast is
magic. We have
a
good record.
Ooh, I like that.
So what do you think?
Oh, I mean, I would love, I love what I do. I love making connections. So I would love to continue to do that. I would love to develop my own thing, my own series or film. I don't want to be premature, but I'm not sure we're going to include this, but I want to produce a documentary series or documentary film that I'm sort of passionate about. So maybe I should put it out there.
Say it out loud and proud.
If it's just a topic, then yeah, get it out there.
Well, I think what I love is being part of a creative team and working as part of a creative team. And so I'm putting it out there, whether it's my own project or maybe, you know, being part of something that's growing again, like a Chopped. It was so amazing to be part of that team and that experience and help it grow and help it develop into what it is.
And boy, it has.
And thank you. And so I think in the future, I'd love to continue doing what I'm doing, but maybe it's either developing my own thing and getting something like that off the ground or being part of something that is starting to develop now.
Have you ever done any show running before? Or
I haven't. I haven't yet.
Well, you never know.
Know.
Watch this year. She gets the biggest show on Food Network.
The Food Network always makes me want to cook, though. It inspires me to cook. I'm not the best chef or anything by any means, but it does. Every time I watch a show, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to see what I have in my kitchen and throw things together.
Yeah, that's exactly the point.
It makes me want to cook and it makes me want to cry. I'm always so moved by some of these stories that I'm just like, oh my God.
I know.
Just cook your food.
But it also makes me feel guilty in some ways, especially when it comes to leftovers, because I'm like, look what they did with their leftovers.
Right. Yeah.
Jeez.
I look in my fridge and I'm like, nope, I got nothing.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
But you actually have a meal.
But I actually have a meal somewhere hiding in that Chopped basket.
So you're incredibly busy, Beth, but what are some of your favorite things to do on your days off? Like, what's a perfect day to Beth?
I am a theater geek. I'm completely obsessed with theater. I have been for a long, long, long time.
Well, you're sitting next to the biggest
theater geek in the entire world. What have you seen lately?
We could have hours of conversation about that. Well, this weekend I'm about to see two things.
What are you seeing? Tell me it's Jagged Little Pill.
No, I haven't seen that
yet.
I'm
obsessed.
Are you?
6 times I've gone.
Really?
Yeah, I love it so much. And if you're an Alanis Morissette fan, you will go nuts for it.
I mean, I am a fan. I just was like, you know, and I knew, I saw, I read about it when it was in Boston so I have huge FOMO. I really do. Like when I was reading about it and then it comes to New York and I'm like, I should have gone to Boston to see it. Like I have this fear of missing out on things, you know, and like Dear Evan Hansen, I tried so hard to go see it at Second Stage before it moved.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it moved. And now like,
and now it's huge.
Now it's good. It's great. But it's like, oh, I wish I saw it then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did see it then. It
this week.
Sorry. Not to make you feel bad.
I just got a ticket to The Inheritance Part 2.
Awesome. Nice. So you saw Part 1 already?
I saw Part 1.
Did you love it? Was it amazing?
Loved it.
I can't wait to see it. That's one thing I have not seen yet.
Yeah.
You need to see
and
it.
And I have a friend in it, Arthur Soria. Rachel and I both know him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We went to FPAC with
him. My friend Jake Odemark's in it.
Oh, that's amazing. You really should see it. And it's a commitment.
I heard it's moving. Yeah. Very, very
it's
moving.
Commitment.
7 hours.
3 hours.
Yeah.
You know, 3.5 hours.
Twice.
So, you know, I gotta gear myself up for it.
Okay.
But there are a few productions like that, like The Angels in America last year.
Harry Potter, Cursed Child.
I haven't seen Harry Potter.
It's amazing.
But it's like there are a few productions that you feel like are just really worth sitting in.
And what else are you seeing?
And then I'm going to see a Bright Room Called Day with Tony Kushner at the Public.
That's awesome.
It's ending this weekend.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And I was like, I got to
see it.
I got to get in.
I always wait until last minute for those things. Like at the Public or New York Theater Workshop, it's always the last week. And I'm like, you know what? People have been talking about this. Maybe I'll
actually go this time. Because what I don't want to happen is for it to move and then, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it. I saw last year, what's it called? Girl from the North.
Oh, Girl from the North Country.
Right, Girl from the North Country. I got to see it at the Public, and now it's moving. And I was
like, I haven't seen that three times.
I don't know how I've seen it three times, but I saw it in London. You know, it was the kind of show where not much happened.
Right.
But I walked out of that theater so affected, mm-hmm. and I was like, what just happened to me? Like, I'm having all these, this rush of emotions,
right?
But like, not much happened in the show.
Right. I agree. It was very, I called it quiet. I was
totally.
Like, it was so quiet.
Totally.
But there was something emotional about it.
Yeah. Every time. Yeah.
I saw Cyrano before it moved.
Yeah. Good for you, girl.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
So I loved that.
So what's a recommendation you have for people that love theater? Like something you've seen that you're like, go see this. Other than Girl from the North Country, which is opening on Broadway in March.
Right. And I'm always curious, April? By the way, like when things move, like how they, you know, how they do or how they've changed. Right. Like
right.
I didn't see Dear Evan Hansen off Broadway, so I really don't know. You know,
same show, and I saw it
on Broadway, which I loved. Right, I thought it was fantastic.
It was,
but
the
like
same.
Sometimes I always wonder about this sort of transfer from off Broadway.
That
off
one
Broadway
specifically did not change much at all.
Okay, so, good to know.
Yeah,
if people are coming in town, I always recommend Come From Away.
Yes, mm-hmm. me too.
I think it is.
I thought it was fantastic.
I just think it was just the best example of an ensemble cast working together.
Totally.
You know, there was not one breakout star. It takes you on this roller coaster. You laugh, you cry.
Agreed.
You know, and yes. I also just was very moved by, wow, I was in New York on 9/11 mm-hmm. and like I
Same.
Had no idea about
this
story and this happened. And so I think it's just eye-opening. It's an eye-opening story. It's an emotional story, but also, you know, I left, I downloaded the music.
Same.
Like for me, and that's the sign of a you know, a great musical. Like I want
to leave, listen
at least
to it.
Singing and listening to the
right.
to the music.
Right.
So I always recommend Come From Away right
Great.
Now.
Love it. Me too.
And Hadestown.
I have not seen the Broadway version. I've seen New York Theater Workshop.
Yeah.
I've not seen Broadway. But
See,
I enter the
FOMO.
Lottery.
Yeah.
I enter the lottery.
Oh,
the
I
time.
Didn't know there was a lottery
there
for
is.
It.
I enter it all the time. So I'm going to go see it eventually, but I just have not gotten there yet.
Yeah, but you saw it off Broadway. So I think I feel
did.
Like you saw it.
I did. We'll see. I don't know. I'll let you know. I'll contact you.
He will
know
not stop at that. He will see it on the B-Way.
You will see it.
Yeah. And go see Jagged Little Pill.
Okay.
And let him know what you think. And then you can have a long conversation about
please
it.
Please do. Because okay. I'm literally, it's my favorite thing I've seen in a long time.
Oh.
I cannot stop thinking about it.
Some of the things, though, I get really disappointed about. You know, like some things people are like, oh, you should go see it. And
I
go see it. And I'm like,
you know what? That's
yeah,
the thing. Some
that,
people,
that
some
honestly
people don't
happens
it.
To me all the time.
Some
like
people
rave about things and rave about them and rave about them. And then my expectation is so high. And then I'm disappointed. So I almost would rather people say nothing to me and I just formulate my own opinion.
Right.
Yeah. It's just hard to do that. We're in New York and like it's hard to not hear people's opinions because it's all we do is put our opinions on people. You know? Like it's literally our job is to like tell you how we feel about
everything. Exactly. It's so true.
Right.
We're seeing Lion King tonight.
We are. Her husband
He's playing Simba tonight.
Going on for Simba tonight. I've never seen Lion King on Broadway. So the first time I see it is going to be when he is Simba, and here he is.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, Lion King, I have a vivid memory about seeing Lion King. My parents were here.
Oh,
you know, they
awesome.
Took me to Lion King. We had orchestra seats.
I'm sure the price is the same.
Yeah. Well, we won the lottery.
Changed.
We won the lottery this morning.
You did?
Yes.
Yeah, so
thank God.
$30. We're seeing it for $30.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, Lion King is a classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I'm so excited. I'm going to sob.
I'm really pumped.
So if you like to listen to RFB when you're not in front of your computer, please consider downloading our free mobile app for iPhone and Android, available in the App Store for iPhone or the Google Play Store for Android.
Hey, Maggie, guess what?
What?
Radio Free Brooklyn's mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. We rely primarily on donations from listeners like you, Maggie. Every dollar helps us stay on the air. Support independent community media by pledging whatever you can. All contributions are tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Please support with a monthly pledge or a one-time donation at radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. That's radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. All right. Well, that was that's our interview. We're going to go into our favorite section of the day. We're going to
so
do
fun.
Some winging it.
Winging it. They're just winging it. Winging it. They're just winging it.
So we've decided to do a Winging It, and it's called Extra Extra Read All About It. So while we're doing our research for Chopped and all that stuff, we stumbled across some really funny tweets and like Tumblr quotes about the show.
Oh, I bet.
And we really wanted to let you read them out loud. So we have compiled a list of fun tweets in this hat, and we're calling this game Extra Extra Read All About It. Maggie will hand them to you one at a time, and if you would, just do a nice reading of these wonderful tweets about Chopped, which are so funny.
Oh, I cannot wait. And then there's some classics, I'm sure.
I'm sure. You might recognize some of these, but here we go.
Do I have to read who it was from?
Yeah, why not? We'll shout them out because we love to, maybe they'll listen to the podcast.
Okay, this one is from Dragon Tonic. That's one word. Great. Dragon Tonic. My dream is to be an editor on Chopped. You get to take mundane criticism and add scary music and some camera changes, and boom, the audience feels like someone was brutally murdered.
It's kind of true. It's so true.
That's pretty accurate.
Oh, love this. Because I feel like everyone's seen this or it's been retweeted, because this is from Anna Kendrick.
Yeah, we love her.
I don't get how the contestants on Chop stop themselves from going, yeah, it tastes bad, because you literally made me cook with a pile of garbage.
It's so true. Sometimes
baskets, I'm like, what?
With stale Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
But what's funny is I also in the research looking at how much goes into these basket combinations.
Yeah.
Our culinary producer, and I'll give her a shout out, Sarah Hormy, is a genius.
Oh my God. It must be so much work, because there's been so many episodes and you've never repeated a basket, correct?
Or as far as I know, no. But she has like spreadsheets among spreadsheets among spreadsheets.
I'm sure.
And it's,
she's very prepared.
Yeah. You gotta be.
Okay. This is from Pea Cocktails.
Okay. Pea Cocktails, what's up?
I love the dramatic music on Chop. I found the meatball very dry, parentheses, musical sting that cracks open the very crust of the earth. End parentheses.
Like, click. Great meatball. Dry meatball.
All about that. I mean.
Yeah. The music is so fun.
Okay. This is Stay Beautiful, although I will say stay has two T's and two Y's.
Yes, so okay. Stay
beautiful.
Every Chopped episode judge. So tell me why you decided to glaze the pastry. Contestant. Well, growing up, my father never loved me. And my mother died a tragic
These are actual tweets, ladies and gentlemen. Someone actually put that out into the world.
Love it. Okay, Becca Pock.
Beck Apocalypse. Creative name.
Welcome to Chopped. The ingredients for this round include AAA batteries, a guinea pig, a member of your immediate family, and Natty Light.
What do you do?
Good luck. You have 30 minutes. Go.
We used to actually like joke with chefs when we were casting, and we'd be like, we're gonna give you a basket. It's gonna be like a pencil eraser.
Right. Yeah.
A tablespoon of peanut butter.
And a dream. Go.
And a rubber band.
Yeah, go.
Okay. Mitch Welling said, everybody loves drama. Don't try and deny that. You think the Food Network really can't afford a new ice cream machine? Come on. Get real.
Yeah. So what's the with deal that? So when something like, breaks down.
They always are like going towards the ice cream machine and like.
There's only one.
Yeah.
Only one
like, oh, and he used it. Oh, that was a mistake.
I know. Well, the truth is, on any set, like things are smaller than they appear, right? So it probably looks like there's plenty of room. But there actually isn't plenty of room. If you have three ice cream machines, then where's the drama? That everybody gets an ice cream machine. No, like, you know, then it's like, who gets to it first? And like, there is time, if everybody does it properly, that one person can use it, clean it out, and the next person can use it. So
but does that ever happen? Probably not.
Very rarely, but it's possible.
Okay. All right. So the camera.
I feel like every time they use the ice cream machine, you're nervous. You're like, oh, he's going home.
Yeah.
Huge mistake.
Mm-hmm. This says Chopped Recipes Bot at Chopped Recipes. Roasted pickled cockles paired with a candy cane milkshake. Dumpling. #chopped.
#chopped.
It does kind of sound like some of them, though.
Yum.
That's so funny. All right, we're almost there.
Delicious.
Oh.
There's only a few left.
Getting hungry?
Yeah, always. Well, not really, because we're talking about AAA batteries and guinea pigs. But, but maybe.
Good point. Kitten Chanted. Let's just take a moment there. Kitten Chanted.
Cool.
Kitten Chanted.
Yeah. Said, okay. I think my favorite thing about Chopped is the generic descriptions they come up with because they can't say the brand's names. So like circular cream filled chocolate cookies, Like, no, those are Oreos, Ted. Yeah, I feel bad sometimes for Ted because he'll have to say sort of like, you know, the sandwich weird. Cookies yeah. or, you know, like it's everything. But that's what I like about Chopped is that it became very, it has stayed very generic. So it's not like sponsored by Oreos
right.
or you know, sponsored by Cheetos.
Do companies try to get you to use their name?
Oh, yeah. Oh. I think it's, I mean, I think with any show,
yeah.
you know, especially any Chopped, show loves huge. The advertiser sponsoring, right. but then it becomes about that and yeah. not become about the food. Or
and I love that you've never gone there. I mean, yeah. that was your choice, but you know, it's never become a thing, which is what's great. Yes, so, it's funny to laugh about, but right. like at the same time, it's no one's competing to get their brand on Chopped, and it's not about filling that brand in that basket. It's just about creating these dishes, which is,
you know, who has one of the hardest jobs is the art department, because the art department has to then
come up with these names,
and yeah. and create the packaging so it looks like the generic sandwich Virgin. Filled
yeah.
cookie
cream
right yeah
sandwich. Wow, love it.
Yeah, that's a job,
because you know it's an Oreo when you see an Oreo.
Yeah. Right, of course you do. Or like Coca-Cola, but it's like soda.
Right. All right, we're gonna do two more.
All right, this one is called Project Catzo. Project Catzo.
Okay, all right. Okay. All right.
2009 Chopped basket, peanut butter, beef tenderloin, apples, and marshmallows.
Actual basket.
2016 Chopped basket, goat thymus gland, which I don't even know what that is.
Neither do I.
Broccoli jello.
Ew.
Sweat from Ted's armpits, and red onions.
God, that's going to make a nice goulash. Yeah.
The last one.
Last one, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, when you do so many baskets, you really have to get creative.
Yeah, Ted's armpit.
Daniel Nelson said, one of the contestants literally said, I was introduced to food at a very young age. Like, Jesus, I sure hope you were.
Just been really bonding with food since I was 3 or 4.
Since I was really young.
Yeah, like what happened in the first couple of years? You just starved to death? Great. Well, thank you so much for being here. That was super fun.
Thank you.
We've learned a lot about your world, and it's so different than what we're used to hearing on the Cool Kids table. So thank you so much for being
Where
here.
Where can people find you?
Yeah, shout
your
yourself
company.
Out.
Okay, so I'm on social media as Casting Queen NY. Mm, now, if you
right.
look at that written out, it looks probably like Casting Queenie. By the way, back in the day, I was like, this is kind of funny. Ha ha ha. I'm just going to be Casting
Queenie C.
NY. Yeah. So Casting Queen NY on
Got
social
it.
Media. And then you can check me out at You Choose Creative, youchoosecreative.com.
That's amazing. And be sure to watch Chopped on the Food Network, not an ad. Love to celebrate that show and everything you do. And thank you so much for being here.
And congratulations.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Stay cool. Stay kind.
Yay.
Y'all, please be sure to subscribe to our monthly newsletter for the latest news about new programming and upcoming RFB events. You can sign up at radiofreebrooklyn.org/newsletter.